Hey everyone, welcome to the Strongpreneur Nation podcast. Today I'm excited to have Scott Allen Turner on the show. Scott is a businessman and personal finance coach who went from being what he calls a self-proclaimed money moron after graduating college to becoming completely debt-free and in fact an early retiree, which is pretty dang cool. He's got over 15 years of entrepreneurship that has given him a wealth of experience, and he now spends his time helping individuals improve their finances, businesses, and lives, which is exactly why I thought he would be a kick-butt guest for the Strongpreneur Nation. How you doing, Scott?
Wicked awesome, Tom. Thanks for having me on the show.
Cool. So I came across you through some, you know, rabbit hole I went down on online and ended up on your website. Fell in love with the fact that you jam out on the guitar and all that stuff. And so before we kick this off, I just got to know right out of the gate here, if you could be any guitarist in history for a day, who would that be?
Oh, definitely Zakk Wylde. I'm pretty much a metalhead.
I
love old school 80s metal, old Metallica, but Zakk Wylde, formerly of Ozzy. He's just one of the great shredders on guitar. I love his musical style. And he really just, he's in your face.
You know, I had that Ozzy album. Was it Blizzard of Oz, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what
yep.
it was? I had that on vinyl and cranked it up in my bedroom when I was like in junior high. And I'm a drummer, but nothing like just monstrous guitars, if you ask me. So Zakk Wylde, that'll work, man. So you playing in a band now?
I'm not. I have twins. They just turned 2. And pretty much what happened was when they were born, a couple weeks before they were born, I had to bow out of the band that I was in. And they were in the NICU in the hospital for 5 weeks, which kind of contributed to that as well. I didn't have a whole lot of free time when those guys were born.
Yeah, they do that to you, don't they?
Yeah.
So you're known as a financial rock star. And I'd love for you to share a little bit about yourself and you know, who or what who you were and what you did to get to where you are now is that financial rock star that helps people. I'd love to hear about that.
Yeah. So I have an IT background. So I've been programming for a very long time. I'm a serial entrepreneur. I've had 8 companies in the past 15 years, primarily educational based companies. I've taught people about computer networks. I've taught architects about green building and energy efficiency design, a lot of other stuff along the way. And I've had a lot of success with the businesses that I've had over the years, which allowed me this year to take all the knowledge I've accumulated in the past, since I graduated college, and turn that into a personal finance passion of mine where I can teach people about the dumb stuff that I've done and all the stuff that I've learned along the way. So as you mentioned, I was horrible with money when I got out of college. I did not know about interest rates, negotiating for cars. I had student loans. I got into a bunch of credit card debt and really got into a bad situation with a lot of consumer debt that wasn't necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Could have been avoided. And that continued for a little while. I bought too much house, as a lot of people do, because the bank said I could.
Yep.
Too much house for a single guy on a single income, made that mistake. But about at the same time, shortly after I bought my house, I stumbled onto this guy on the radio. His name was Clark Howard. He's one of the great inspirations in my life for learning about money, who really changed my perspective when I was in my mid-20s. So I learned about interest rates and mortgages, how you shouldn't have debts or how to better manage debts, how you can save money. And even to this day, I still look to him for advice. He's got a great website, and he's still on the radio. He's been on the radio for 30 years now, giving out advice. And that was really a turning point in my life when I went from the money moron phase into slightly smarter, I would say, because I had plenty more mistakes along the way, especially in the stock market. I mean, we always think we're great stock pickers, but we're not. So that was a turning point. And then, as I mentioned, last year, I was able to I sold one of the companies that I owned, which gave me the freedom this year to kind of do whatever I want, retire early. And for me, I've always loved working, and I've always loved the businesses that I built, the jobs that I've done. So I don't consider myself working now, even though I'm building a business and teaching other people about personal finance. Me, it's fun. I get to do this because I want to, and I love it.
Well, as we were talking before we hit record here today, I really appreciate your style. I mean, I hop on your website, and like I told you, it was just nice to see a dude in this space, this super white collar space, where it could be intimidating to a lot of people that don't understand money and how it works. And so I really like your style, and you're just pretty straightforward and direct with the way you teach and the way you write. And I'm curious, as a personal finance coach, what are some of the most common issues you see with the people that you're helping, like the root issues?
I get a lot of emails through my website, people, because I, the basis of my website and the podcast I do is I just answer people's questions. You know, so I'm always asking people, you know, send me your questions. I want to help you out. I'd say a lot of them are people that are in debt. So they're struggling to get out of debt. One of the most frequently common questions I get is, you know, how do I save more, or how do I get out of debt quicker? So they're already in the situation where we've got a bunch of credit cards, or we've got a bunch of credit card debt. We've got a bunch of student loan debt. You know, we're in over our heads. You know, what do we need to do to get out of that place? Mm-hmm. And from that point, what I usually tell people is you've got to have a plan. I mean, you got to start with what you want to accomplish. Where are you trying to get to? Because if you don't have a destination, you will never arrive there. It's like getting in a car, you're going on vacation. Well, you got to look at the map and figure out where you're going first. Are you going to Disney World on the East Coast, or are you going to Disney World on the West Coast?
Right.
You got to make that decision first. You don't just hop in the car one day on a Saturday morning and say, all right, family, you know, where are we going to go?
Mm-hmm.
Without the iPhone map or whatever you're using for your GPS. You got to have that destination. And from there, you can start to work backwards to figure out how you're going to get there. Do you need to cut some of your expenses? Do you need to cut the cable? Do you need to pick up a side job, depending on how quickly you want to get out of debt? There's a lot of things you can do in order to increase that speed that people have to get out of debt.
So you sound like you've got quite the process down. You're a process type thinker with this, reverse engineering some stuff. And you know what, but then earlier you shared about how you were, you know, a younger money moron. What made the change for you? When did the switch get flipped?
The first instance was as soon as I got my first college loan bill. I mean, I didn't know anything about interest rates at the time. I didn't learn this when I was younger. A lot of people don't. We don't learn it from our parents. We don't learn it in high school. We don't learn it in college. So the loan shows up one day. I look at it. First bill, it's all right, I'll $100. I write the check. Nothing happens there. But then the second month, I get the statement back and it says, you've paid $2 in principal and $98 in interest. And so at that point, I start getting, you know, angry. I was like, what do you mean? And to me, that was $98 that was wasted. Yeah, I got an education out of it, but I'm not getting anything out of that $98. I mean, I could have just burned it and it would have been the same thing in my mind. So I got really angry at that point at that wasted money. And still to this day, that's one of my core things that drives me is I hate wasting money. I hate seeing it just wasted on things that you don't need to waste on. To me, going on a nice vacation is not a waste, or a nice meal is not a waste. But interest payments, that is like a wicked waste for me. And I hate seeing other people waste their money on that too, with expensive car loans, credit card and consumer debt and things that we don't need to waste money on. So I made a decision with that college loan payment, or I'm going to take every available dollar that I have, I'm going to throw at that loan, and I had them all paid off in 2.5 years.
Wow.
Which at the time I wasn't making a whole lot of money because I was fresh out of college. So, and I was single. I had an apartment with a roommate, but still I made just threw every dollar I could at it. Without knowing, still not knowing much about money, but I knew I hated that interest payment.
Yeah, it's, you know, I'm really amazed. You know, you brought up debt as the first thing that of issues you see, and I'm in Colorado, and I like hiking a mountain with a lighter pack than a heavier pack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and that's really, you know, how I look at debt now. You know, it's, you know, how heavy of a pack do I really need to get up that mountain? And most of the stuff in that pack is, you know, I can do without. And so when you think of the average person's money IQ scale of 1 to 10, where would you say it's at?
Probably most people are at a 5, and that's just based on the averages of what is happening, at least in America. Half of the population don't have any savings at all. Mm-hmm. Half of the population is carrying some form of credit card debt month to month, which means they're paying late payments and or interest payments on that. And we have learned, it's kind of been ingrained in us, that debt is a part of life. You know, we should expect to have debt. We should have a car payment. We should have credit card payments. And it's just not the case. People haven't learned that yet. And they don't know about the life's experiences when you don't have debt. I mean, they haven't become aware of that. They don't know what it's like. And that's part of what I try to teach people. It's like there is a whole different life out there when you don't have a car payment. I mean, that was such a huge part in my life. I mentioned earlier that house I bought, that was way too much house for me. And I realized that after I had moved in, when the bank account was empty, I didn't have any savings. I didn't have any emergency fund. And the mortgage payment was coming up. But I did have this awesome sports car, which I bought prior to getting the home. So I made the decision, I'm going to sell this sports car and I'm going to just pay cash for my next vehicle. So I'm not going to have a mortgage and a car loan, just going to have a mortgage.
Right.
And at that point, it's like, oh, now I have a mortgage I can actually manage a little bit better. And I don't have this huge car loan. Such a relief for me. I mean, I slept better. I didn't have to worry about making the mortgage payment every month. It was so freeing. And I vowed, I'm never going to have a car payment again. And that was 15 years ago. And that single decision has allowed me to accumulate so much extra money. And that's one of the things I try to share with people. Just imagine if you go back 10 years in your life, you didn't have a car payment for the past 10 years. Average car payment now is $400 a month. How much money would you have? And it's about $50,000 that each of us could have if we didn't have a car payment for the past 10 years. Mm. And most of us have no savings. As I said, half the country has $0. So you're talking zero compared to $50,000. That's a huge difference for just one really small decision that we can make.
Yeah, it's, you know, we haven't had one car payment for quite a while either. And life is much different. I can absolutely attest to that. And so what... a lot of people have head trash around money, you know, based on their upbringing, their background. You know, we tend to take our experiences with money growing up and bring them with us through life. And I'm curious if you had, did you have any head trash around money and financial stuff, you know, that you brought into adulthood with you?
What's interesting about my family and what I brought, got out of my upbringing is my parents, number one, they never owned a house. They rented their entire lives. They're from a different generation, some of that older generation, so they never had credit cards. They always bought their vehicles in cash. They were always used. But they always beat in my head, you should save money.
Yeah.
So I may not have learned any of the other stuff, interests, rates, mortgages, all that other stuff, but I did get told over and over again, you need to save half your money. And I've been working since I was 10. So I always put a little bit aside as I was working through my teenage years. And I think that helped me as I got older. Getting into college and getting out of college, I really wanted to spend all my money. I mean, that's why how I got into some of that credit card debt. Mm-hmm. So maybe it didn't work completely, even though I was learning that from my parents. So I think the biggest thing for me was saving is a good thing, but the head trash was, you know, I really want that stuff. When I got out of college, the first thing I went and blew money on was this massive car stereo. And it was one of those deals where the stereo was worth more than the car. We've all seen those cars driving down the street where we know that the tires and the rims are obviously worth more than the car.
Right.
I had one of those stereos that was worth more than the car. Rang up the credit card bill on that and started getting the bills on that, overpaying for that stereo. So it was, getting back to your question, it was, I want the instant gratification.
Uh-huh.
Is the head trash. I don't want to wait and save up for something. And this is the trap I'd say the majority of people get in. We don't want to wait. We don't want to wait and save up for a car. We want to see how much money we can afford each month and get like the $40,000 car or the $35,000 car when we really should be getting the $5,000 car. We want to get the mortgage and the house that our parents have who have been working for 20 or 30 years 4 or 5 years when we get out of college, rather than getting the starter home or renting or living in a condo in something more affordable. So we really have this instant gratification or this deserving mentality that I'm young, I went to college, the bank says I can get it, I'm going to get it, and that's where the trouble begins.
Yeah, it's like comparing yourself to somebody who's been in the game for 20 years and you're fresh to the game and you feel like you got to live up to where they're at. And it just doesn't make sense. You're in two totally different places.
Exactly.
Yeah. You talk about the car stereo. I had a 76 four-door Malibu Classic, was my first car. I bought it for $400 from my grandmother. And I put in like a $600 Alpine stereo system.
I loved Alpines. I had an Alpine. Yeah.
There you go. So that, good old Alpine. That was a long time ago. I hadn't thought about that for quite a while. So, you've had 8 businesses. What, how was the first business different than the 8th business for you?
Well, actually, the first and the 8th were really quite similar. All of my business I've had partners in. Mm-hmm. 3 of them, my partner's been my wife, and she works with me on quite a lot of things. I would not have achieved any of the success I've had without her by my side. But my first business, I had 2 guys that approached me when I was at my corporate job and said, hey, we're starting a company. We need some web design work. Can't pay you, but we will give you ownership in the company. So I said, all right, that works for me. Because I enjoyed building websites. And that was an education-based company. We taught people about installing computer networks in hospitals, office buildings, large commercial spaces. And then the one that we just finished last year, and the one that we sold, also an education company. So I was able to transfer those skills that I learned early on. But that was teaching architects about green building energy efficiency design. And that I ran with my wife, and we had some employees for that. So those 2 businesses were actually very simple. The ones in between were sometimes different. There was one I started in, say, early, mid-2000 with, again, some of those business partners that I had. And we built, I don't know if you've used lynda.com, that site where you can go and learn how to do, they teach you different computer topics.
Okay.
It's a membership-based site. We built something similar prior to lynda.com, spent a bunch of money on it. I managed to contract our team to do it, but we didn't have any marketing behind it. So we built this cool product, spent some money on it, but then we didn't spend any money on marketing, so it never really took off.
What do you think your biggest lessons learned have been as an owner of 8 businesses? You know, if you were in front of an entrepreneur class at a university or a bunch of young kids who were going to go into business and you had to give them some couple biggest takeaways from those 8 businesses, what comes to mind?
Number one is integrity matters. When you go into business, you've got to be honest with the products that you build, put 100% of your effort in them and build the highest quality that you can. Try not to pretend to be something that you're not. If you don't know something, go out and hire somebody to do. But the common denominator between everything that I've done in these businesses is we always started out with, we're going to build a business based on building awesome products. We're not going to try to do something that we're not good at. We're going to provide the highest quality that we can to our customers. And we're going to care and nurture those customers. That goes hand in hand with number 2, I would say. Is routinely in any of the businesses that I've done is I will try to reply to an email that I get from a customer within 24 hours. Mm-hmm. Now, it doesn't always work out that way, but it's always been my goal. And that doesn't matter if it's a Saturday, if it's a Sunday, if I'm on a vacation. As an entrepreneur, you really don't have a whole lot of vacations.
Right.
You're always on the business. And to me, I don't mind that as much because I've been able to travel all over the world owning these businesses and working from home. So I don't matter if I've got 5 or 10 minutes of downtime. I'm more than happy to hop on the computer and help out a customer. Because I enjoy helping people. They're going to get something out of it. And I know they're going to go be a cheerleader for me.
Yeah.
Especially when I'm answering those emails on Christmas Day, which I've done, or any holiday for that matter, or a Sunday. We get these emails back from our clients and they say, I can't believe you helped me out on Christmas Day. That's so amazing. I'm going to go tell my friends about what you did. And it's free marketing.
Yeah, it's quite the differentiator too.
Yeah. And so many, you're in the contracting business. As a homeowner, I have to call contractors occasionally for different things. And I am just shocked. Like every business that I have called on some task or some point or another, someone inevitably does not call me back or doesn't send me an email. And I think to myself, all I would have to do is get into the exact same business and reply to customers, and I would do amazingly well. I mean,
you are absolutely 100% right. I mean, you couldn't be more spot on. I am blown away by literally if you simply do what you say you're going to do, show up, communicate well, and you know, don't be a moron, be respectful to people. You can absolutely kill it in the service industries.
Yeah, it's like you say, it just blows me away that people do not reply. Apparently, people are just making money hand over fist. I mean, that's the only way I can explain it away. They don't need the money, so they don't need to call me back. But I don't think that's the case.
No, it's not. The sad truth is most contractors aren't making enough money to live, and it's funny. There's a whole mindset too. These guys, they take the biggest risks with their physical well-being and property risks and, you know, going up high in the air or damaging a home or whatever it is, you know, all this risk, and yet they don't charge enough. Mm-hmm. And the reason they don't charge enough and they get into this money war is because they don't deliver that kick butt experience. And so if you don't deliver the great experience, people are not going to pay for it.
Right.
You know, if I go to Ruth Chris and they charge me $100 for a steak and the steak sucks, you know, I'm not going there again. So, you get me fired up when we start talking about contractors and that they're not charging and the whole experience. It's really crazy. So excuse me. Imagine you've got 5 minutes before you're going to go on stage to give a talk that will save humanity from all of their financial troubles. You got 5 minutes to prep. What would be your main points?
First one that applies to everybody, no matter how much income you have, is spend less than you earn. It doesn't matter if you're a doctor who makes $500,000 a year. There are doctors out there that are just absolutely broke, that are 50 years old, 55. They're approaching retirement and they show up at the financial planning firm and they're like, you know, I'm looking to retire in a couple of years. And you look over the paperwork, it's like, no, you're not. You may make $500,000 a year, but you have squandered it because you've overspent. So spend less than you earn is number one. Automating your savings goes hand in hand with that. The easiest way to spend less than you earn is to set up little schedules each month. Either if you've got a 401k, mm-hmm. you have that available to you. If not, you auto withdraw into a, what's called a Roth IRA. Mm-hmm. At a brokerage firm, they can be set up in 5 minutes, just so you're setting aside a little bit each month, preferably a lot, but just to get started just a little bit so that that money can grow over time. Next would be start early and save often. The younger you are, the less that you have to save. I was giving some numbers to a guy yesterday. He emailed me. He's 19 years old, 19, and he's wow. asking me about investing. I said, dude, you are going to have so many millions of dollars when you retire. And I just gave him a quick example of putting $100 away each month for the next 40 years. He would have to save $50,000 out of pocket, and he'd end up with $600,000 when he retired by starting at 19. And that's just $100. So I told him, you know, when you get up into your mid-20s and you're banking 60, 70 grand a year, you're going to be saving way more than that. I mean, right. you're going to have millions and millions of dollars. But yes, definitely save early, save often. I wish I had known that when I was 19. I didn't. I was mid-20s before I actually learned that. So yeah, I try to share that with people, and I love it when I get the young people. But sadly, I get the old people who are 75, and they're like, mm-hmm. oh, we got a reverse mortgage, and we have no savings. You know, we're living off of a house. That's not what you want to hear.
Yeah.
So those three things. So I had 5 minutes. Those are the ones that I would suggest to people.
So you know, you brought up the older people, and when I say older, I mean not the 19-year-olds, but you know, what about the dude in his 40s, who maybe they're behind? What do you tell them at this point?
And I get those emails as well. And what I suggest for people to do if they're in their mid 40s is it's the same concept of you got to work backwards. Mm-hmm. Pick when you would like to retire. Is it 65? Figure out what your cost of living is going to be based on what you're spending today. And do you plan on travel? Or are you going to sit at home all the time and volunteer? There's calculators out there online. You can do these, plug in these numbers to see what it's going to be. And do you figure out, you know, how long am I planning on living based on my parents or grandparents and how long they lived? What's my expected life age? And then you can start working backwards and say, all right, I'm going to need this much money for this many years. Here's how much total I have to have going into retirement. Here's where we're at now. How much do we need to save each month in order to get from here to there? And then you get a solid plan of what you need to save. And if you're behind, then you know, well, maybe I need to cut down my expenses. Maybe I need to pick up a side job. Maybe I need to get into a little more aggressive investments. And you can start making those educated decisions rather than just taking a guess.
And so somebody that's in that situation, you know, what kind of resources, other than ScottAllenTurner.com, do they go to for help? You know, and I guess it piggybacks into my next question here that just came up is, you know, how do you pick an advisor or a firm or know where to go for help? You know, what's some advice that you give somebody who knows they need help, their money IQ isn't where it needs to be, they want to invest, they want to figure this thing out. How do you help them?
Sure. And some of that, I always recommend, at least for people who have financial questions, it's like going to the doctor. I mean, when you go to a financial professional, they're there to look at your unique situation. Yeah, there's a lot of great websites. There's a lot of great books. And that's good education to get, which I obviously advise everybody to go out and get as much education as you can. But it's really beneficial to sit down with somebody and go over your specific numbers. And there's a couple of different routes for those. I prefer what's called a fee-only financial planner, because they have what's called a fiduciary duty. They are legally bound to do what is in your best interest. They're not trying to sell you anything. You do pay them a fee. Sometimes it's an hourly fee. It might be you go to business with them for a day or once a month for 6 months. Some of them work on a retainer. Some of them get paid by managing a percentage of your assets, depending on how much investments you have. But there are a lot of people out there that do that. They do the hourly rate all the way up to the managing of your finances for you based on a percentage of your assets. But the benefit, again, is the fee-only financial planner. You're not getting screwed. They're not trying to sell you junk. They're not making money when they say, go buy this life insurance policy. That's between you and whoever they recommend. They're not making any kickbacks or anything like that. I've been working with one for the past 10 years, even though I know this stuff, because the guy's smarter than me. He does this day in and day out. He's knee deep in the tax code, so he can save me all kinds of money that I would never know about. Taxes are a huge, huge issue that people need to be aware of. So you can have a smart tax guy on your side, somebody who lives and breathes the tax code and can be able to look at your financial situation and say, here's what you need to do in order to minimize the taxes that you're going to pay. So start there. The website, I believe, is NAFP. Well, you can just search for fee-only financial planner and you'll find plenty out there. Word of warning, though, you don't want to get confused with what's called a fee-based financial planner. That's a tricky term that people came up with who are not fee-only planners to kind of like skirt the issue of they are trying to sell you something, would be insurance or particular mutual funds. So they kind of like created that term to get around the issue.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, you know, if you go to any local business networking group, you're going to walk in, there'll be 50 people in the room and there's 12 financial guys.
Right.
And what I hear from people is, you know, some represent a private firm, some are the more well-branded, you know, national brands and things like that. And people seem to really not know, you know, how to choose them. And what the differences are and things like that. So the low-hanging fruit here is just start with the fee-only thing and work from there.
Right. Really, the question for me comes down to this. If someone is making money based on the advice that they are giving you, then they're giving the skewed advice. I mean, they're not giving honest advice, because when they're trying to sell you something, I mean, they have to make that sale to pay their own mortgage.
Right.
And then they've got to make that sale to feed their family. So they cannot have a non-conflict of interest if they're selling you something. Fee-only financial planners, they don't have that conflict of interest. That's why I recommend people use them. They get paid, it's a flat fee. You know what you're going to get paid going in, however many dollars per hour they're charging you. They'll tell you over the phone sometimes, you know, here's what our rate is.
Yeah.
And whether you go with this mutual fund or that mutual fund, or you buy this insurance policy or that insurance policy, the fee is the same. It's the exact same.
So is it out of line to think of this kind of like you might pick a personal trainer? You know, if I go meet a personal trainer who's fat and out of shape, I probably not going to benefit from them. You know, is it out of line to ask somebody who's going to help you in this area, you know, hey, what are you making and what's your situation look like? You know, that's what comes to my mind. I don't know.
For planners, it's a little bit different because some of them start young. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've interviewed a couple for my own podcast who are just around 30. So they don't have the breadth of experience that my planner does, who's in his, I believe he's in his 50s. So he's been doing it for a lot longer. And you probably are not going to find too many financial planners that are fee only who are like multi-millionaires. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a little bit different than the fat trainer at the gym.
Sure.
But they do have the head knowledge, which is what is important. Because there's an exam they have to take. They have to get continuing education. They have to, for the fee onlys, they have to agree to serve that fiduciary duty. So they're legally obligated to do what's in your best interests.
Yeah, I get it. They're, you know, the young ones aren't going to be millionaires yet and things like that. Not that they have to be for them to know what they're talking about. But I'm just looking at it from the point of view of, you would see the same patterns, you know, regardless of what the dollar amounts were. You know, you'd see a healthy plan.
Right. And there's also the CFP designation, Certified Financial Planner. That's a rigorous exam. Mm-hmm. Everybody goes through the same knowledge. You have to learn the program, go and pass the exam. So everyone who has that designation, which is something else to look for, CFP.
Okay.
And it's a registered trademark, so you just can't slap it on. Based on what you know, that tells you that, all right, they've got this core of knowledge. No matter who you go and they have that CFP designation, they're all going to have that base level of knowledge.
Good deal. I'm taking some notes here. So what's the best money book you've read?
Oh, let's see. The one that got me, well, the one, excuse me, the one that got me started was, it's a bit dated now, but it's written by Clark Howard. I think it's called Get Clark Smart. It's very old, but it was one of the ones I enjoyed reading. Here's a perfect one. I talk about this all the time on my blog and even just in general conversations. It's called The Millionaire Next Door. Mm-hmm. It was written by a college professor who studied millionaires. And the book goes through, society has an idea of what millionaires are, what they look like. They drive BMWs and Mercedes. They have really expensive suits. They wear Rolexes, nice shoes. They're eating out at Ruth's Chris every night of the week. But this guy went, and it was years ago, he did all this research. I don't remember how many thousands of millionaires he brought in and interviewed. And you find out, oh, the other thing people think about millionaires is they inherited their wealth, so they don't work for it. Mm-hmm. You know, they step on the back of their employees to get their money. And all those things, they're just absolutely false. And the great thing about this book is you read about all the myths and the lies that we think about millionaires, but then they talk about, well, how do they get to be a millionaire? So 90% of them are first generation millionaires. And they get through it by running, a lot of them have small businesses. I mean, just small mom and pop shops where they've been tight with a penny through over the years. So they've been allowed to accumulate wealth. They live in older homes. They're not in the McMansions. They're driving used cars that they pay cash for, so they're not taking out car loans. Another interesting stat is they usually own about one nice suit. And I think on average they paid for $400 for the suit. So
<Okay. laughs>
the ones that have Rolexes receive them as gifts. They don't go out and buy Rolexes. They drink cheap wine and cheap beer. They're not drinking Grey Goose and I don't know what an expensive beer would be. So just the facts that you learned about them, and by reading that book, it really changes your mindset to think, oh, well, this is how I get to be a millionaire. You know, I don't go out and lease a Mercedes because that's not how it's done. I don't go out and buy a 5,000 square foot house because the millionaires who got to be millionaires didn't go out and do that. You learn what you should do in order to get from where you are to the millionaire status, not this perceived notion of we think that, well, they got all this money and they live in these fancy homes and they're living this particular lifestyle. Right. And it's just not like that.
It's, you know, in the whole turtle in the hair thing, it's being the turtle.
Right. Exactly.
Know? And, because no matter how many times you read that story, the turtle still wins.
Yes.
and I think we live in a hare society. Everyone wants to be the hare and they want to, you know, quick fix everything.
And, right. And what I've learned is you cannot get rich quickly, but you can get rich slowly.
Yeah. Well, that's good stuff. So, Scott, you were out of college, 22-year-old money moron, looking back on that guy. What would that dude think of the guy I'm talking with right now?
Oh, see, if I was 22 and look at myself, I would probably say the same thing I said to my college professor when he said he was telling me about money one day in the hallway, and he said, you should save 10% of what you earn and you should give away 10%. And then I looked at him and I laughed at him. I said, why would I save 10% when I get out of college? I can just wait till I'm 40 and save 20%. Not knowing the power of compound interest.
Yeah.
Now, for anybody who doesn't know the power of compound interest, you can go out, find a financial calculator and do the math. And you'll find that when you wait those 20 years, you have to save probably 4 to 5 times more to catch up at age 60 than if you had started younger. That's why you need to start young and start often. So if I were 22 and looking at me, I'd say, yeah, whatever, dude. I'll just wait till I'm your age, like go earn $1 million in a year. That's probably what I would think.
Was it on your blog that I saw the story of I think he was a postal worker who never earned more than like 15 grand a year?
Oh yeah, the UPS driver. It's such a great story.
Tell us that.
Now, this is a long time ago. This guy, I don't know if he's still alive or he passed away recently, but he worked at UPS for decades and decades and decades. He never earned more than $14,000 a year. Now, that sounds like not a lot, but that's because he worked at UPS in the 30s and 40s because he's so old. Mm-hmm. But he wasn't a manager. All he did was keep saving. He lived a very modest lifestyle and he kept reinvesting in UPS. And UPS, as we know, has done very well over the years. But when he retired, he had accumulated, I think it was something ridiculous, like $90 million, $70, $80, $90 million.
Yeah.
By living his modest lifestyle and just reinvesting everything, living below his means. Just a crazy amount of money. And he ended up giving it all away because what did he need the money for?
Yeah, that was crazy. I saw that. I was like, holy cow. I have a buddy who financial planner, and he told me this guy who worked at Caterpillar came in and was retiring and said, yeah, I want to look at, planning the rest of my life here financially or whatever with you. And sat down, and the guy had never made more than 35, 40 grand a year and had 3-4 million in the bank.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it was just that same concept. So, well, that's good stuff. So the lesson here for me today is be okay with being the turtle.
Absolutely.
And that's good. So at Strongpreneur Nation, we have a pledge, and there are five different promises in this pledge, and I was curious, if anyone wants to see it, go to strongpreneurnation.com, click the about page, and you can take the pledge there. But you had shared with me that number two resonated the most with you.
It did. And I had to spend some time thinking about this one, where I got that philosophy from. It's, I will do what I say I'll do. Mm-hmm. in thinking back to my youth and growing up, the only thing I could come up with was I watched a lot of Westerns growing up because my dad did. And I still love them. Love Clint Eastwood. Love John Wayne. I've seen all their movies half a dozen times each. But in that time, back in the olden days in the West, mm-hmm. when you made a deal with somebody or when you told someone that you were going to do something, it was, all right, I'm going to spit in my hand and we're going to shake. And then that's the deal. Yeah. And your honor was everything. And it was highly valued. Not like it is today in society. I mean, people don't even care about honor a whole lot anymore. So when I was going through your list, I thought, my word is my bond. It is extremely important to me. And one of the very few times in my life when it's when I'll get absolutely irate is when someone questions my integrity. And I know that's, I'm being true and honest, but they're questioning it. So honor above most everything else is super important to me. And I think I got that from Westerns because it's a different time. Not like today when we have a very litigious society and you've got to have 20-page legal documents.
That's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, do even the minorest of things. But really just being a man of your word or a woman of your word, as much as you possibly can. My wife occasionally would get on my case because I might not go to a birthday party or something because, hey, I've been lying in bed all day because I'm sick. So I know I said I was going to go, but I prefer not to go to the birthday party. So there's some occasions when I do have to flake out. But as far as business goes, do what you say you're going to do. And if you do that, you will succeed and people will respect you.
Yeah. Can you imagine the success of, let's go back to the service-based businesses we were talking about earlier. If they would just do what they say they're going to do, how much more success, a small business would have if they just live by that one thing.
Or not even that, just building on that. If something goes wrong and a service-based business corrects it, and maybe they give a discount or they give a freebie for that correction. Uh-huh. That just goes so much farther than just trying to hoard the money because that person will go out and say, they made a mistake, but they fixed it. I would recommend these people. And it gives you free business. Now, occasionally, you get the grump they're not going to be happy with anything. And that's true in any business. There's always that 0.1% who you will never, ever, ever satisfy. You just have to move on from them. But for everybody else, when you go above and beyond, even if you don't make a profit, you lose a little bit of money, you don't make as much profit as you thought you were going to, you will make that back in the free marketing and the free word of mouth. And I don't think a lot of people realize that.
Yeah, take it on the chin, do what's right, and move on. And it sends a message,
It does, yes.
And that's awesome. Well, Scott, I really appreciate you hanging out with us today and all that. How can people reach you? What's the best way to get in touch if they want to talk to you about unmessing their financial mess?
Yeah, if people have any questions about their personal finances, I'm more than happy to help out. I can be reached on my website at scottallenturner.com, A-L-A-N, or Twitter, Scott Allen Turner.
Good stuff. Well, I appreciate you hanging out with me today. And as we're signing off here, my man Travis is going to fade the guitars in really loud and cranked up with some distortion. It's probably not going to be Zach Wilde worthy, but it's still pretty cool. So thanks again, Scott, and for hanging out with me.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate it.
All right. Everybody, head over to strongpreneurnation.com and make sure you take the Strongpreneur Pledge if you're looking to level up in your life and your business. And until next time, we'll see you then. Whatever the heck I'm trying to say here. I'm out.